Nooit kooi mee.
Well, good morning. I am, sorry, I'm talking with my mouth full. Is that not polite? I'm not sure about these etiquette things. I have a big old cinnamon roll here, along with my chocolate milk. I don't have hot chocolate this morning. I only have chocolate milk. And it's cold, which is... It's great for washing down a hot cinnamon roll. So I warmed it up in the micro oven, microwave thing. I was trying to think of a fancy name for it. Couldn't think of anything. Cute and stingy. So, because I'm overloading on sugar with this cinnamon roll thing going on. So, again, I apologize for the background noise. I'm in a hotel. Still in a hotel. And the air conditioning system is running like crazy here. Even though it's 40 degrees outside. Or 30 degrees, whatever it is. It's cold. Let's find out what it is outside. Just for the, you know, see if we can figure out where I am. By telling you the temperature. The exact temperature of where I am. I got to pull it up. Of course, I got to have a phone for that. Used to have just a thermometer. Where you call the, you just call the time and temperature on the phone. It is 36 degrees outside. It will be a high of 59 degrees today. And it's supposed to be mostly sunny. Very windy this afternoon, by the way. So there you go. Right now, outside, it feels like... it feels like 28 degrees. So that's what it feels like. But it's not that. It just feels like it. Because feelings are, you know, important. So there's a lot of things happening over the weekend. I almost had a show over the weekend. Mostly because I was bored. I was very bored over the weekend. Because, I've just been sitting around drinking chocolate milk and eating donuts and pizza and cheeseburgers, and I did have a fish sandwich once. Not quite as bad. I'm trying to put on some weight. I'm trying to fatten up a little bit. For the holidays. Yeah. So I'm getting about a year start on it. Figure I better start early. Let's talk about a few things. Let's get down to the nitty gritty nuts and bolts of the show here. We have a interesting. Is it interesting? I don't know. It's interesting. One of the first things I thought when I saw this report I thought it was interesting. So I'll just pass it on to you because I think it's interesting. It's because it's interesting. I saw this report, news report, that this bunch of senators went down to the border. Talk about the border here, first of all. A bunch of senators went down. This sounds like a kid's story. A bunch of senators went down to the border. One came back. Five didn't. What happened? So I had this one report. It was Ted Cruz, of course. One of the more gutsy individuals in the Senate for conservatives. I'm not going to say... I like Ted. I think he has a bit of a problem communicating sometimes. He has a bit of a stutter and stammer as well, but it's a different kind of thing. He's very careful about what he says, and so it comes out as... he just doesn't have a good flow in the way he communicates. Not someone like a Larry Elder or someone like that who can just rattle off facts and just, you know, machine gun down things. Now, he's getting better. And Ron DeSantis, I have to say, is the same. He's on par with that. He's as a politician. Now, Larry Elder is not really a politician. He's more of a pundit. Ron, whereas DeSantis, on his toes, gets asked a question about policy and about things that are going on. He's very quick on his toes and able to really communicate very well, in my opinion. Not only is he quick to defend, he's quick with his principles in that defense. And that's key when you have a hostile press. I think it's most important. Obviously, it doesn't matter what you're like or how well you can communicate when the press is fawning over you. We've seen that example over and over again here with the current occupier of the White House. I guess he's in the White House. I don't know. I'm not sure what's going on there. So anyway, he's down there. Ted's down there, and he's trying to videotape because they won't let press in. So the senators want to go down and find out what's going on themselves. And the conditions down there are atrocious. We're not even being told the half of it, in my opinion. The parts, of course, that they are allowing them to see, I'm sure that there's facilities that we're not allowed to see, or that nobody even knows exists probably at this point. And we're not even sure what's going on the other side of the border with the NGOs and everything that's happening there. There's a whole lot more going on the other side of the border being organized in absentia of the government. Don't kid yourself here. We're not being told the whole story about what's going on down there. They're hiding things. They always do. So we know that because of that, we know that the extent of it is probably even far greater than what we know. The way they're, you know, I would not doubt that the coyotes are probably in cahoots. They're called cahoots coyotes. They're probably working something out in terms of a back deal with the administration. I would not be surprised at all to find that out, considering, you know, Fast and Furious and all the other things that happened down there. That's a good cinnamon roll. So Ted tries to take some video of the conditions, and this lady gets in his face. A U.S. senator. A seated U.S. senator. Former presidential candidate. Gets in his face and says, "We're trying to protect these people's dignity. It's not a zoo. Please give these people their dignity." The point of this, I've been to some other third world countries. I went to a hospital for lepers. And a lot of them were in very bad condition. They'd lost limbs. And talk about, you know, bad conditions. Very hopeless situation for some of these people. In most third world countries, especially in Muslim countries, when you lose, if you don't have a limb, it's very difficult to survive. You certainly can't take care of your family. You know, you're very much in a... It's not like prosthetics and that kind of thing that we have here that are overwhelmingly abundant. You know, typically, they end up sitting under a tree with a blanket begging the rest of their lives. And these people laying there in their bed with, you know, bad situation. Were begging us to take pictures of them. They wanted people back in the United States to know what they were going through, because they wanted help. The dignity wasn't an issue there. I mean, it wasn't the first thing on their mind. Don't take a picture of me in my bad situation because I'm so vain. That was not the issue. These people were grateful and asking us to take pictures. Because they knew of the kindness and compassion of the people that we represented. So it was, this is, it's nothing but an attempt to protect themselves politically, obviously. Because that's all these people care about. They don't care about the people who are down there in these atrocious conditions. Sleeping shoulder to shoulder on the floors with cushions. Being covered, you know, sleeping in space blankets. COVID, you know, rampantly spreading from one person to the next. Because they got little plastic shields up. You know, they can only put three or four people in. Well, that's just, it's just ridiculous. I think people are just going to stand around inside a plastic shield all day long. It's estimated now there's about 20,000 people. At this point, as of today, 20,000 kids are incarcerated. 20,000 kids. That's a small town. In any town in the USA, that's kind of the average-sized town in the USA. It's absolutely pathetic. And they're not here because Joe Biden is a nice guy. Kind, decent, moral man. And when I hear people say that kind of thing, this one lady, and for those of you who don't know, at the press conference, this one lady got up, started extolling the virtues of Joe Biden. And she didn't, when they ask a question of a politician now, this is a typical situation. When they ask a question of a politician, they don't just want to ask a question to get answers. They ask a question so they can make a political statement in the process. And sometimes that's all they do. And this even happens in Congress. When people get called before Congress to ask questions, to be questioned on certain topics, whatever the topics may be, it is very typical for them to continue to make a statement and not even ask a question. Because it's all political theater. It's their opportunity to get in front of a camera on CNN or C-SPAN or whatever it's going to be and get their little 30-second soundbite that plays well. And it's pathetic. It really is. It's really, really pathetic. That's a finger-licking good roll there. I will put that away because I'm sure some of you are probably creeped out by that. Me eating in front of you. But I appreciate you joining me this morning with my breakfast. Joining me for breakfast this morning. It's Breakfast with Kevin. The news is good to me. So they're making Ted out to be the bad guy here, which is kind of ridiculous. That he's the one that's taking away their dignity. When in fact, they're the ones who are putting these people in this situation. Now, speaking of that, all these kids, they're saying, oh, these kids are going to turn, they're not going to turn these kids away and send them back on a long journey. Treacherous journey with hurricanes. What else was it? Hurricanes and in the desert with hurricanes. I don't know if any of you ever been to Mexico. Yeah, it's an arid climate. It's not desert like you would think of desert. There's people and villages strung all the way down through Mexico, down into South America. There's a lot of people everywhere. And there's food along the way. It's not a journey I would like to take, but it's certainly not. You know, it's parts of it are third world. put it that way. But it's not just horrid conditions. And, of course, there are a lot of nefarious activity along the way. It troubles me that, one of the reasons that people stopped coming to the border during the Trump administration, one of the fallacies that the Democrats, of course, now they're using all this, they set all this stuff up. But one of the things that happened right before Trump came into office, and actually it went right after he came into office, border crossings stopped. The illegal stuff started, basically dropping off like crazy, almost to nothing, because everybody knew that the border was closed. We weren't going to, it wasn't closed. Now let's get into that as well, because this is a misnomer as well. People are left with the impression that we're not letting any immigrants in. Let's examine the facts here just a little bit. This country allows in, legally, a little over 1 million immigrants every year. A little over 1 million immigrants every year. That's about the, that's a large city every year that we're planting here in the country. And they want us to take in another 1 million. And then they scream about, comprehensive immigration reform, which is nothing. They want to include amnesty in that. And of course, every time you have anything comprehensive, it's radical change. And the radical change comes with a setup for the next radical change. But this is the typical way that the leftist Marxists get into power. They create, and this is most politicians in general, they create a crisis, which they want to then step in and solve for you. And then in the process of solving that, they create a greater crisis. So this is what they do all the time. They do this constantly. So they're going to have this comprehensive immigration reform. We've had immigration reform before. And now all of a sudden we have to have different immigration reform. We've even given amnesty before. And now we're supposed to do that again. Well, now it's between 21, I just seen the latest numbers. It's between 21,800 and 25,000. Last report I heard was 18,000. Now there's even, I figured, well, by now it's got to be 20,000. That was like 2 days ago. That was like yesterday morning. Today now there's already over 20,000. So we're increasing by about 3,000 or 4,000 a day at this point. Increasing in numbers. Being incarcerated. Being detained or whatever. Now, about these kids at the border. These kids aren't making the trek on their own. They're traveling with groups of people. It's not just some poor kid with a little, towel wrapped up with some supplies taken off on a 2,000-mile walk by himself. That's not the way this is happening. There are people leaving their family. Some are traveling with parts of their family. And here's the deal. Some of these families are traveling with their kids, knowing that when they get to the border, they might be turned away, but they're gonna dump their kids at the border and just walk off. Or, they're gonna stay right there at the border until their kids are inside the country, basically what it amounts to. But they're not just making the trek on their own. Now the parents are coming with the hope of getting in. But if they can't get in, they're going to turn right around and just let their kid walk across the border. Parents are, 100 yards away. Because they know their kids can get in. Now, once your kid gets in, whether they, when they turn 18 or whatever ever else happens, if they can get across the border, now they can come and live with the kids. Once the kids get established, or depending on what kind of home they get placed in. This kind of thing happens all the time. Now, am I blaming the people who are coming across illegally? Yes, to some extent, yes. They know they're breaking the law. But they don't know any better. They think that this is the way it's done. They're being told this is the way to do it. They're going to get amnesty. They're coming across trying to work the system because they're trying to, yeah, they're trying to get a better life for themselves. An economic immigrant is not a persecuted, politically persecuted individual. It's just someone who wants to make a better life for their family. Don't we all? But there's a legal way to do that. You know, it surprises me that when someone breaks into the Capitol building, it's an insurrection and this is an attack on our democracy. When someone breaks into the actual democracy out here in democracy land, where the democracy happens, that's not a problem. All of a sudden, we should just open up the border and let anybody in. They come in. A large number of them, I'm not going to start, you know, saying what percentages or how many of them do it, but a large percentage of them are fleeing criminal activity. Many of them who've come over here by the thousands have been arrested here before for assault of some kind, either sexual assault or other kinds of assault, crimes of some sort. And they're not all that way, no. But there's plenty of them. A disproportionate number, actually. There's also a disproportionate number of people who come across who use other people's social security numbers. They mess up a lot of people's lives because they file, they make money in somebody's name under a certain social security number, and that individual finds out later that, oh, I didn't make this money. No, they get audited or something happens, and they find out that you've been working for somebody else for, you know, under a different name. Because you're only known as a number, not as a name here in this country. So, I see now that Circleback Psaki is being interviewed by someone on ABC. Yeah, that's yeah. Don't even listen to that. At one point there was a surge under the Trump administration. Now, if you remember, it was a caravan that started down in South America somewhere and worked its way up through here. Huge. They wanted to create this thing at the border. This was drummed up and started by individuals that are connected to the leftists in this country. It was a planned event. They wanted to create a crisis at the border because they wanted to blame this. They were hoping for human rights violations. Of course, any child who died on the way up here, any child who died in detainment from the flu or whatever it was they had, if they had other sicknesses, you know, pre-existing conditions, if they passed away for any reason, it was Trump's, you know, that Trump killed them. I think there were two or three kids that died while they were being detained. And that was, of course, that was Trump's fault. And this was obviously playing out. It's almost as if they use people over and over again, and people don't realize this. They use people as pawns. The Rules for Radicals book calls them useful idiots. And even the people who are all drummed up and psyched up and in the streets, you know, protesting and it's those people are even the useful idiots as well, because they think they're doing something wonderful, and yet it's just creating chaos and overwhelming the system, and it's a continuation. And the people at the top, you don't see them out there. You don't see Hillary Clinton out marching in the streets. They will claim, like Joe Biden did, that he was marching in Thelma, and he was marching in across the bridge, and he was doing all the sit-ins during the civil rights movement. He didn't do any of those things. He has said that several times, and he's been called on the carpet for having not done those things by CNN, by regular mainstream media. This has been debunked several times by them, that he never did that kind of thing. So he stopped talking about it. Well, now as he's getting older again, he's starting to say it again. Because he forgot. He's just kind of starting to spit out old speeches again. So he's saying those kinds of things again. And they all want to say that they were part of those movements back in the day. You don't see them out there doing that now. Because that's not, they're above that now. They have people for, you know, they have people for that. Called useful idiots. And they probably never did it anyway. It's like the story now that Kamala is talking about how she was, you know, I guess Martin Luther approached her stroller. She was that child. When her mother asked her, "What do you want?" She said, "Freedom." She knew that wasn't her. That never happened. It's just stuff like that is just constantly just propaganda that they get people worked up with. And it's just pathetic. So getting back to the whole issue of protests. I guess there's a protest out in California somewhere, I believe. There's protests all over the place, but one protest now. The thing that's fashionable now is to protest against. We stand against hate crimes against Asians, and the AAIP, I guess it's now called, the Asian American something Pacific AAPI, whatever it is. That's the new term now for them. We have a new term now, again. New term alert. Asian American Pacific something islands, I don't know, whatever. That's the new name. And there's a rise in hate crimes against them. And of course, they're blaming white people for that. They don't say who's doing it. All they're saying is they're hate crimes, and obviously it's the white man's fault. It's always the white man's fault. Because, you know, the white man is the prejudiced one. I just saw a commercial the other day that had this Muslim couple walking down the street with their child. They're just out for a stroll on the sidewalk. They're walking past someone's house. It's a white couple with a child. And they're talking in their driveway with their neighbor. And the couple walks along and they're waving. They wave at the couple in the driveway. They wave a couple times and the couple looks at them and they just turn away. They don't wave back. This infuriates me. That's not the way we act in America. That is not by... And you know where I feel more prejudice and discrimination when I'm walking down the street? Let's just say non-Caucasian individuals. When I'm just being myself and I just say, "Hey, yeah, how's it going?" Or just wave or whatever, or just smile and, you know, wave. You'd be surprised at the way I get looked at and treated because of my skin color. It's to say this doesn't cut both ways is absolutely just, you know, the only villain in this whole thing is the white man, the white families, that they're all the prejudiced ones. It's baloney. So the protests, you know, again, here we are out in the streets standing against and protesting against Asian crime, Asian hate crimes. What exactly does this kind of activity accomplish? Explain to me one Asian hate crime that this is going to stop. The actual effect it's going to have on anyone's life, other than the people who are doing the protesting feel really good about themselves. Look at how virtuous I am. I'm standing up for these people's rights. And in the process, you're probably all for tearing down someone else's rights. Because now you're all of a sudden become the moral standard. And your opinions now are all of a sudden so much higher than other people's. This is what happens, and this is where it goes. And I think there's some people that are starting to realize that the system eats its own. At some point, you can't just keep going down this quasi-virtual synthetic sense of morality where everything, and then it becomes microaggressions, not just aggressions, but microaggressions. If you blink while someone's talking to you, that's a microaggression. And just different things like that. It's just, it gets to the point of absurdity and insanity. And that's where we're headed, folks. That is where we're headed. If you think there's going to be an end to this, with the principles that they're using right now and the techniques and the way they're going about this and the way that everything's happening, there's no redemption, first of all. If you've done something 10 years ago, you're now vilified for the rest of your life. Something that 10 years ago was normal and still is normal, in my opinion. And yet you are now that's socially unacceptable. Now you lose your job. You lose your standing and status in the society because you're now wiped off the social networks. there's no end to this. It just gets worse because there's no forgiveness, there's no redemption, there's no. This is a phony sense of, well, it's a religion on their part, but it is a very alarming and frightening, actually, type of societal structure. And this is not the first time it's happened, folks. This is very similar to the fascism that we saw in Italy, the fascism that we saw in Germany. It's just there was the axis of evil. There was the Italians, the Germans, and with Mussolini, Hitler, and then the Japanese regime, the emperor. They kind of worked together initially. Now the Italians and Germans probably at some point in there, they probably would have teamed up against the Japanese. Once they had taken over things, the Japanese probably would have been the next target. Eventually, that one of those three would have tried to rise to the top. My guess is it would have been Hitler that probably would have tried to be the final leader. However, truth be told, Mussolini was actually probably more atrocious in the things he did. But that was, he only wasn't as popular because his movement wasn't as big. He didn't have as much money. Didn't have as big of a push in the process. So it's interesting that all this vilification, like Black Lives Matter, and all the protesting that we do against the Asian hate crimes and all that kind of thing, they try to make this country out to be a terrible, horrible place with all kinds of inhumane treatment and the human rights issues that we have. They try to play all those things up to make America look bad, dumb, and ugly, because that's what they want to, because it's all because the founders were that way. And therefore, all these people who believe in God and country, they're the ones they're the problem. And so they vilify us for this, all this stuff. Although it kind of snaps them in the back a little bit when they go to talk to China. And they want to talk about human rights with China. Real issues. Genocide type stuff. And they confront them with that, and then they stick right back in their face, well, America has enough problems of its own, like organizations like the Black Lives Matter that just sprung up in the last few years because of the way you treat your, black people. So they throw it back in their face. And Black Lives Matter is all based on a lie. It's all a bunch of lies. In terms of the statistics of how black people are treated by police Now, granted, don't get me wrong. There's discrimination. There's issues. There is bigotry, if you want to call it that. It sometimes this stuff perpetuates on its own, and I don't have time to explain that statement. But there's when you start to push against, instead of letting things work out and people to get along with each other, you start shoving things in their face and calling them names. People tend to react to that. They get tired of it. And they start to have a, they start to build walls that shouldn't be there, that don't even exist, that didn't exist before. The enmity between ethnic groups gets worse. Because you're not talking about forgiveness and grace. You're talking about vilifying the other side. Nobody wants to be put into that. So it's a very tough situation. It's very difficult because there are people who make money and get fame and power by perpetuating the issue. They build it up and make it worse because it makes them look like the hero. And they get rich doing it. So it's built on fallacy and lies. In fact, the George Floyd issue, I'll weigh in on this a little bit. What really matters in this case, if anybody's interested in the truth, is what the actual cause of death was. I'm not saying what the coroner's report was. I'm not saying what the autopsy said. The actual cause of death. Autopsies can be faked. Coroner's reports can be faked. This is the kind of thing that in this particular case, the toxicology reports and that kind of thing that came back, if you believe those things, and I think in this particular case I do, because I have a hard time believing that two independent autopsies were done on George Floyd. One of them, this is aside from the official one, one of them agreed completely with the autopsy report from the actual government officials, the coroner's report. Another one said he died of asphyxiation. There was another case like this that happened out in California. And a young man was flipping out, freaking out, was having basically a mental breakdown in his home. This is a very frightening thing for a family. They called the police. Police came in. They detained the individual, got him down on the ground. They did use the knee on the neck thing for 5 minutes. She says 5 minutes. There was nobody setting a timer, and there was no video. It was just pictures. She said it was for 5 minutes. The young man died 3 days later. 3 days later, he died. And the coroner's report said it was from asphyxiation. Now, you have to understand that that means basically you couldn't breathe. You died from... Now, it is possible that you can choke someone to the point of passing out, and beyond a certain point, there's brain damage involved. And then at that point, you won't last very long. Now, the cause of death wasn't asphyxiation or complications that came from the asphyxiation. It was asphyxiation, which meant that was his cause of death. the actual cause of death, 3 days after the event, would have been some kind of brain damage or complications, you know, that were caused by the asphyxiation, not the asphyxiation itself. He would have been dead on the scene if that was the case. Same kind of thing happens here with George Floyd, where the levels of fentanyl and other drugs in his system, which have adverse effects on both of them. Now, he was walking around. He wasn't just on the ground saying he couldn't breathe. He was walking around saying he couldn't breathe. He didn't want to get in the car because he started getting paranoid. He started getting this paranoid attack. And he asked, when they got him into the car, they actually asked him, he asked them to put him on the ground. Just let me lay on the ground, let me lay on the ground. Because he couldn't breathe. He was panicking. Some of the drugs he had in his system would cause this paranoia, kind of all this phobia attack stuff, claustrophobia thing. So the bottom line is, these officers are not going to get a fair trial. Now, do I think that they did a good job? No, I don't. I don't think they did a good job at all. Unfortunately, I think there's a couple cops there who probably were not really as involved, and they were in this situation, and they kind of got caught up in, you know, all the stuff that was going on. And the senior officer there who knew this, who knew George, had some run-ins with him before, was kind of the guy who was running a show. Trying to take care of a bad situation here to keep this guy from hurting himself and hurting other people, and it got out of it just went off the rails, and now these guys are getting charged with murder. So I'm glad I don't have to make any decisions in this case, and it doesn't matter whether I fall on one side of the line or the other. It doesn't matter what I think at this point. I'm not going to tell you what to think. And I don't want you to judge what I think. That's what it boils down to. Because I'm not sure what to think about it. I wasn't there. All I'm going by is reports I've heard and read. And that's all anybody can do at this point. Which brings me to this last and final conclusion. There will come a day when every single one of us will stand before God. You're not going to stand there and point fingers at other people or tell them that, well, I was a member of this church, so therefore everything I believed was correct. Oh, yeah, okay, you checked off all the boxes. You got this religion. Okay, that's, you're good. You're good to go. No. The one question that Jesus asks, or the statement that he makes when he's separating the sheep from the goats, is, I never knew you. And there will be a group of people there who will shout, didn't we do all this in your name? And I'm hearing a lot of people in politics now say, you know, they'll, even though they hate religion, they'll bring it up occasionally just to justify what they're doing. They'll say, well, this is what Jesus would teach. This is what Jesus would teach. Jesus would teach we're supposed to feed the hungry, do this and that. Yeah, that's what we're supposed to do. That's what we're supposed to do that. Individuals. Jesus isn't going to look at you at the end and say, okay, you paid your taxes and those taxes went to help these individuals. Therefore, you did a good job. Good for you. You're such a generous individual with other people's money. That's not what he's going to say. Because he's about relationship. He wants you to have a relationship with those individuals who are hurting, not the government. The benevolent government. A government's going to step in. And in fact, I would even go so far to say that, you know, he does command us to give to the church, and the church is supposed to be the storehouse, the warehouse, so the people will know there's food in my house. That's a safety net. That's a social safety net in the community. That's what the church is supposed to be. And one of the things it's supposed to be. And if we abdicate that responsibility to the government by allowing them to take more taxes and do more things like that and start to take away from our the wealth that we create, that we're able to give from and experience that generosity and have the church experience this community covering that we can create. Once it becomes institutionalized, even in the church, it can become a religious activity that means nothing to the relationship we have with God and with people. That's, you know, he basically says, when did we see you hungry and crying and naked and in prison? Whatever you've done to the least of these. So he's talking about whatever you do to interact with those people. That's how you know him. Interesting stuff about that. I'm running out of time here with this show, and there's a bunch more stuff I want to talk about with the FBI and this whole shooting that happened out in Colorado. I'm going to talk more about that this afternoon if I have. Hopefully, I'll have time to do that. Probably going to be stopping on the road somewhere to do that show this afternoon, and I'll be presenting a little bit of my take on some of the stuff that's going on with the FBI, as well as even the Secret Service and some of the other alphabet soup organizations that are out there. This is getting to the point where it's getting really disconcerting. I'm hearing more and more stuff from the FBI that at the upper levels is really starting to bother me. And they're just the tip of the iceberg, in my opinion. I think they're just one of the organizations. I guess Trump, I saw a headline, something about Trump said there's something about some of the alphabet soup organizations out there that he trusts that actually are the good guys. We'll see what, I'm going to go back and see if I can find that article, because I'd like to know what his take on it is. He's, you know, he's being on the inside like that. One other thing, too, is I guess New York Times or somebody is out there, somebody's out there trying to deplatform Babylon Bee, of all things. Babylon Bee is a satirical, it's more of a right-wing satirical organization. I never knew that they were right-wing. I actually never knew that. I thought that they were just kind of apolitical and just picked on every side, because I've seen them pick on every side. they come out with these little news reports that are kind of lambast, you know, just kind of really off the, you know, deep end, kind of crazy silliness, you know, just kind of, I could read some of them for you. Maybe I'll do this afternoon. But they're hilarious. The problem is now they could actually read the real news, and you'd think it was satire because it's so ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And so we're going to see how that plays out here in the next couple days. Because they're trying to be, I think somebody's trying to sue them. Might be New York Times is trying to sue them. Trying to get sued. They're trying to get all this stuff is going on with them. And I think somebody's actually, there's a senator or somebody's a congressman trying to request that they get deplatformed. They want them taken off the internet. I'm not sure where they post their stuff or how they post their stuff, but it's crazy stuff. Have a great day, everybody. Top of the week. And I'm praying for you. Hopefully we get through this week just fine. But have a great week. God bless. Take care.